Moon lovers. A word about two immortal sisters. We have met in passing Eos, or Aurora, as the Romans called her, and know that her task was to begin each day by flinging wide the gates that let first the god Apollo and then her brother Helios drive the sun chariot through. Their sister Selene, Luna to the Romans, drove the nocturnal equivalent, the moon chariot, across the night sky. By Selene, Zeus had fathered two daughters, Pandia, whom Athenians celebrated every full moon, and Ursa, sometimes Herse, the divine personification of the dew. After Zeus tired of her, Selene fell in love a number of times. A fine, heroic youth called Cephalus caught her eye, and she abducted him. She gave no thought to the fact that he was already spoken for, married, in fact, to Procris, a daughter of Erechthonius, first king of Athens, the issue of Hephaestus's spilled semen, and his queen Praxithea. Despite Selene's radiant beauty and the luxurious moon palace she installed him in, the kidnapped Cephalus found himself missing his wife Procris dreadfully. No matter what silvery arts of love the goddess of the moon employed, she failed to arouse him. Disappointed and humiliated, she agreed to return him to his wife. All the time, jealousy and injured pride were boiling inside her. How dare he prefer a human to a goddess? The idea that an ordinary woman could stimulate Cephalus while her divine being left him cold? With mischievous insouciance, she began to plant doubts in his mind. "Ay," she sighed, sorrowfully shaking her head as they approached his home. "It saddens me to think how the oh-so-pure Procris will have been behaving in your absence." "What can you mean?" "Oh, the number of men she will have been entertaining doesn't bear thinking about." "How little you know her," Cephalus returned with some heat. "She is as faithful as she is lovely." "Ha," said Selene, "all it takes is honey and money." "What's that?" "Honeyed words and silver coins turn the most virtuous to treachery." "How cynical you are! I ride over the world by night and see what people do in the dark. That is not cynicism, it is realism." "But you don't know Procris," Cephalus insisted. "She's not like other people. She is faithful and true." "Pah! She'd leap into bed with anyone when your back's turned. I tell you what..." Selene stopped, as if an idea had suddenly struck her. "If you were to make her acquaintance in disguise, yes? Show yourself willing, show yourself willing, shower her in compliments, tell her you love her, offer her a few trinkets, I bet she'd be all over you."
"Never."
"Up to you, but..." Selene shrugged, and then pointed to the verge along which they had been walking. "Oh, look, there's a heap of clothes and a helmet. Imagine if you had a beard, too." Selene vanished, and at that very moment Cephalus found that he was indeed bearded. The change of wardrobe that had inexplicably appeared by the roadside seemed to beckon to him. Despite his protestations to the contrary, Selene's words had planted a seed of doubt. In putting on this absurd costume, Cephalus told himself that he was not yielding to this doubt, but rather setting out to show Selene that her cynicism was misplaced. He and Procris would call up to her that very night as she glided by in her chariot. "How wrong you were, goddess of the moon!" they would cry. "How little you understand a loving mortal heart!" Words to that effect. That would show her. A short while later, Procris opened the door to a handsome, bearded, helmeted, gowned stranger. She was looking a little haggard and drawn. The sudden and unexplained disappearance of her husband had hit her hard. Before she had time to inquire of her visitor, however, Cephalus shouldered his way into the house and dismissed the servants. "You are a very beautiful woman," he said in a thick Thracian accent. Procris blushed.
"Sir, I must—"
"Come, let us seat ourselves on this couch."
"Really, I cannot—"
"Come now, no one's looking." She knew that it was pushing the boundaries of hospitable Xenia a little farther than was called for, but Procris complied. The man was so forceful. "What's a beauty like you doing all alone in such a big house?" Cephalus picked a fig from a copper bowl, took a lascivious bite from it, and dangled the soft, juicy half that remained in front of Procris. The Greek for "one who shows figs" is sycophant. It seems that either sellers of the fruit in the streets and marketplaces were known for their fawning, flattering attentions, or showing a fig was the equivalent of a phallic gesture. Figs have always been considered an erotic fruit, after all. Or it may have been something to do with the way figs are harvested. Whatever the reason, fig-showing, sycophancy, became a word associated in Athenian legal practice, applied to those who brought frivolous, malicious, or unjustified private prosecutions. Their toadying manner caused the word to take on its common meaning today.
"Sir!"
As her mouth opened to remonstrate, Cephalus pushed in the squashy fig. "A sight to inflame the gods themselves," he said. "Be mine."
"I am married,"
she tried to say through the seeds and pulp.
"Marriage? What is that? I am a rich man, and will give you whatever jewels or ornaments you ask for, if only you will yield. You are so beautiful. And I love you."
Procris paused. It may have been that she was trying to swallow the remains of the fig. It may have been that she was tempted by the offer of precious things. Perhaps she was touched by this sudden and intense declaration of love. The pause was long enough to cause Cephalus to rise in fury, cast off his disguise, and reveal himself. "So," he thundered, "this is what happens when you are alone, dishonorable, deceitful woman." Procris stared in disbelief.
"Cephalus, is it you?"
"Yes, yes, it is your poor husband. This is how you behave when I am away. Go, leave my sight, faithless Procris. Away with you."
He lunged forward with a shaking fist, and the terrified Procris fled. Out of the house she ran, out into the woods, never stopping until she collapsed with exhaustion on the fringes of a grove sacred to Artemis, who discovered her the next morning and coaxed from her the story of what had happened. For a year and a day, Procris stayed with the divine huntress and her retinue of fierce maidens, but at last she could bear it no longer. "Artemis, you have looked after me, tutored me in the arts of the chase, and shown me how men are always to be shunned. But I cannot lie to you. In my heart I love my husband Cephalus as much as ever I did. He wronged me, but the wrong he did came from his great love for me, and I yearn to forgive him and lie in his arms, his wife, once more." Artemis was sorry to see her go, but she was in a charitable mood. Not only did she let Procris return to her husband without first plucking her eyes out or feeding her to the pigs, actions that were by no means alien to her, but she bestowed upon her two remarkable gifts to present to Cephalus as a peace offering.